the Ohio School of the Air. Men who made America. Stories of action, of achievement, of the men and women who have contributed to the molding of the nation. Today, the corn grows tall. The story of maize.
We're from Hideaway, Hideaway, best thing in the land. Joy on every hand, we're from Hideaway, Hideaway, that's where the tall corn grows.
Out in Iowa, they sing the praises of corn, of Iowa, where the tall corn grows. For Iowa is unmatched in the production of corn, though other states, Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana notably, are close second. Corn, the maize of the American Indian, America's gift to civilization, the principal food staple of the Western Hemisphere. Discovered maize in its wild state. Was it an Aztec from Mexico, where fossilized ears thousands of years old have been found? Was it one of the earliest Indians of Iowa, where prehistoric impressions of ears of corn have been found in slate deposits far underground? No one knows. Yet it is certain that someone, back when the world was young, tasted the young kernels and found them good. More important, he saved some of the precious grains and in another spring planted the seed, cultivated it, and brought it to autumn harvest. For unlike wheat and other life-giving grains, corn is unique among all plants in that it requires the help of man to survive. Wrapped in its strong husks, it cannot seed itself, nor can the first tender shoots compete against grass and weeds. And so, from the dawn of time, the Indians cultivated corn, brought it to a fair state of perfection. Other cereals grew wild. They gathered them where they found them. Corn alone was the Indians' agriculture. And so, when the Pilgrim Fathers appeared on the bleak New England scene, without food to see them through the winter, it was corn which proved their salvation.
Good shot. Did you fetch him down?
I think so. Looks like a young deer sticking to that thicket yonder. Follow after me.
Coming, Captain Standish?
Lead on, Weatherby. There they are. Little to the left in that thicket.
This'll mean a bit of a change from fish, eh, Captain?
Yes. I'd willingly exchange it for a measure of wheat. What the colony needs is grain. We must not eat any more of our store, or we shall have none to plant in the spring. Short as it is. Oh, there, Perkins. Good shooting. Well, men, let's get them skinned and quartered. I'll have a look around. Your shot may have brought the redskins. Come along, Weatherby.
Captain, look. It's a cultivated field.
More like a swamp. Tall, reedy plants. More like young saplings. still. They are planted in rows. Let's have a look. Well, no fruit on them.
Yes, here's one. See? Well, closed hard yellow grains on a large spike. Much like wheat, Captain, but sweeter, more like a nut. Mm.
Give a hand here. Something buried in this mound of earth. Yeah? Mm. Well, there's a basket with 2, 4, 8, 12. Why, there are 30 or 40 spikes of grain. It's a godsend, Willoughby. We'll take this back.
Captain Standish, look, they're Indians. 6 of them.
No, don't shoot. One is coming over unarmed. Here, we lay down our muskets.
He's friendly, see? He's extending his hand.
No, he's pointing to the grain. How can I tell him we're hungry?
Rub your stomach and then eat some of it. Then show you're pleased. See? He understands. He's digging up another mound. He's going to give us some more.
I'd like to tell him we want to plant some, too.
Well, scratch the soil and put some seeds in.
Like this? What's he trying to tell us now?
Looks to me as if... Yes, don't you see? He's going through the motions of fishing. That's it, he's feigning.
Draw a picture of a fish in the sand. Yes, that's it.
I understand now. They put a dead fish in each hill. Some heathen custom.
No, don't you see? That's to fertilize it. See? He's showing how tall it grows that way.
Of course. I understand his pantomime now. He means that without the fish, it grows only shoulder high. And fertilized, it yields twice as large a crop.
That's it. This is a godsend, Willoughby. We'll hide half this corn, and next fall, we'll have plenty for all. How can I ask him what they call it?
Just point.
Maize.
Driving before them the Indians who'd given them the maize, civilization pushed always westward, across the Alleghenies to the lush black lands in the clearings of Ohio, Kentucky, and the Western Reserve. No need to carry seed. For centuries, the Indians in these new lands had raised corn, each tribe choosing in its own primitive way the seed best adapted to the soil and rainfall in its locality. Corn that yielded 80, 100 bushels to the acre with only the most primitive cultivation. But the American pioneer was ambitious. With 8, 10, a dozen mouths to feed, he craved even greater yields than the fertile loam gave from the Indian seed. So we find Jake Leeming, a second-generation pioneer, at work in his cornfield in the heat of a July.
Oh, Pa, I'm tired. Can't I go back now?
Oh, why, it ain't 5 o'clock. We can finish 2 more rows before supper time.
I don't see why you gotta tie strings on ears like this. Nobody else does.
No, and nobody else raises corn as good as mine. It gets as many bushels to the acre.
I don't see how marking those ears helps.
Ever seen that ear your grandpappy saved from the first crop he raised when he came to Ohio?
Yeah.
Well, just enough, wasn't it? Reddish black and small.
Yeah?
Well, that's the kind of corn the Indians growed in these parts. Not a patching to the corn we raise. Big, full, straight ears.
Just by picking out ears?
That's it. just for watching and saving the prize ears and using them for seed. I've bred that little nubbin to fine big ears. Hey, watch. Where's that woodpecker lighting there?
There. In the third row over. He's at the top ear.
Well, you keep your eye on that ear then.
That's the ticket. Got her marked?
Yep. Why'd you mark that ear?
Cause. Woodpeckers is smart enough when it comes to corn. He's out looking for a meal, and his instinct takes him straight to the fullest, juiciest, ripest ear. Mark my word, come fall, that ear will ripen a full 10 days earlier in the run of them. And it'll be a fuller, heftier ear. And that's what we want in seed corn, the full ears that ripen earliest. Next planting time, the seed from that there ear you've marked will go into the ground, and in the fall, it'll multiply 500-fold. Good, long, straight, full ears. Oh, of course, we let a woodpecker show us a prime ear for seed.
Thus did Jake Leeming, by constant selection, breed the small nubbins of the Indians into corn that won the grand prize at the Paris Exposition. What Jake or anybody else at that time didn't know was that he was selecting only the mothers of his ears. Any one of hundreds of tassels in the field might have been, and were, the fathers of those seed kernels. Only by constant year-to-year selection of the best ears could he get his fine ears and his large yields. What genius would fix those desirable strains so that year after year, good seed would always be assured? That was still to come. Out on the Illinois prairies, the seed corn business is looking up in the early 80s. At the state fair in Peoria, the prizes are being given out for the best seed corn.
And the blue ribbon for the best 100 ears of seed corn to Jim Reed of Delavan. Now, besides the blue ribbon, there's a prize of $50 and a new Parlin Orndorff plow. Now, here you are, Mr. Reed, if you'll step right up.
I'd like to talk to you for a minute.
Well?
My name's Holden, G.P. Holden. I'm in charge of the corn seed department for Funk Seed Store in Bloomington.
Yeah, pleased to meet you.
This is a fine lot of seed corn. I'm glad to see you get first. You deserve it.
Yeah, we think it's pretty good.
Now, tell me about it.
Ain't much to tell.
Well, how'd you develop it? Select it.
Well, it was really my father hit on it. It was more of an accident than anything else.
An accident? Why, how's that?
Well, when Pap come to Illinois from Ohio in the 60s, he brung a lot of seed corn that had... Well, it had done right well there. The Gordon Hopkins, he called it.
Gordon Hopkins, yes?
Well, the first spring, there was heavy rains. Water stood over the new planted fields for weeks, so that more than half the seed rotted in the hill. Never did come up.
I see.
Well, Pap didn't have no more seed, so he rustles around and gets some of the native seed. Little yellow, they called it. Same as the Indians had always planted in them parts. And he replanted wherever the Gordon Hopkins hadn't come up.
I see. And the little yellow crossed with the Gordon Hopkins bred this corn.
Reckon you might put it that way.
And tell me, what's the yield per acre?
100 bushel and better.
100 bushel? Why, that's marvelous. Now, you see here, Mr. Reed. I want all your crop for seed. Funk will market it, and we'll call it...
Farmers round Delavan that get it from us call it Reed's Yellow Dent.
That's it. Reed's Yellow Dent. Reed. Why, this corn will increase the yield in Illinois 50%.
Well, 'twant less we keep on selecting. Just picking out the prime ears. There's nubbins grows from Yellow Dent seed, same as from any other seed.
There was the rub. Corn still wouldn't breed true to type. Oddly, it took a 17-year-old schoolboy out in Iowa to prove that to the wisest corn men from the State Agricultural College. Our friend Holden, who dickered with old Jim Reed at the Peoria Fair, is now the foremost authority on corn at Ames, Iowa's famous agricultural college. In 1902, 30 miles away in Des Moines, Uncle Henry Wallace's farm journal, Wallace's Farmer, is staging its annual Boys Corn Show, and Professor Holden has come to deliver the prizes. Most interested of all the boys is old Uncle Henry's grandson and namesake, Henry. City-born and bred, but a lad deeply rooted to the soil by three generations of Iowa pioneers to whom agriculture which in Iowa means corn, was the breath of life. Eager, inquiring, curious, solemn-eyed, too serious for his 17 years, this alert, inquisitive lad hangs on every word of Iowa's foremost corn man, but has the temerity to question, to wonder.
Now you see, boys, this ear lacks distinction, too.
Uh-huh.
Now, here's a better one. You notice the fullness around the middle?
Oh,
see
yeah.
how it tapers?
Yes, yeah, I do.
All right. Now, contrast it with this one.
Oh, there's a difference.
But this one is the best of the lot. Now, there's a perfect ear. Why, we'll give it first. This second, and this one third. The others I'll rate in order as they're arranged on the table, down to 10th place. There are 33 in all, but beyond the 10th, there's very little difference. Well, congratulations, my boy. You've raised a good ear. Now, you winners will get your certificates in the outer office.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Henry, you look skeptical. Would you have rated them differently?
Oh, no, sir. It isn't that. I was just wondering.
Wondering? Wondering what?
Well, whether anybody, even you, Mr. Holden, can predict for sure what kind of an ear is going to grow from a grain of corn.
Well, my boy, we think we can, but I'll tell you what. Now, you take these 33 ears. Plant them. One ear to a row in the order in which I've ranked them. Now, you'll see. The one I've ranked first will give you a 40% better yield than number 10.
Well, thanks, Mr. Holden. I will. And if I prove you're right, I've really helped corn growing. And if I don't, why, well, I've learned something important, too.
Henry, you didn't come to the office yesterday. It was publication day, too.
Well, no, I was working on my corn figures.
Is that more important than learning the business that you're going to inherit someday?
Yes, sir. I think so. Iowa could get along without Wallace's farmer, but it can't get along without corn. With $200 land and mortgage foreclosures right and left, well, Iowa can't make out much longer with hit or miss seed corn. Anything I'll learn about corn will make me just that much better a publisher.
How did your test with Mr. Holden's prize ears come out? We might have an article on that.
No, no, we wouldn't dare. Listen, Dad. They're all cockeyed.
You mean you didn't keep your record straight?
Oh, no, they're perfectly straight. It's just that, well, there's no rhyme or reason for the whole thing. Now, you know how I planted them, an ear to a row in the order Mr. Holden graded them. Then this fall, I weighed the yield row by row. Well, now look here. The ear Mr. Holden ranked first was 22nd in yield. And one of the also-rans has the highest yield, 79 bushels to the acre. The lowest is 33. But they don't stack up with Mr. Holden's rating at all.
That's funny.
Not so very. You can't tell by his looks how far a frog will jump, and you can't tell from the looks of an ear of corn what'll yield.
I think different up at Ames.
Of course. I don't know very much about corn, but I know this much. The finest-looking ear of corn ever grown will raise runts and nubbins.
Recessive traits. Scientists call that.
Oh, I know. I understand. Every grain of corn has thousands of parents and thousands of traits, any one of which is likely to pop up. Well, the corn problem will never be licked until someone finds a way to breed corn so the dominant trait will always dominate, and the recessive ones will stay buried.
There's no such thing as a pure line in corn.
There will be. Somehow, sometime, someone will find out how to make corn breed true.
Even while 18-year-old Henry Wallace of Des Moines was expressing this declaration of faith in the ingenuity of science, an owlish little biologist, and a biologist is a student of animals, not of plants, was performing the first experiments that were to make young Henry's prediction come true. 1,500 miles away from the Iowa cornlands, at the Cold Springs Genetics Laboratory of all places, George Shull is starting an experiment that will for all time solve the mystery of maize. Out into his absurd little 2x4 cornfield on the shores of Long Island Sound, a cornfield that would have given any Iowa farmer a laugh, goes the serious academic Professor Shull. Here's no great shakes as a farmer. Something of a dandy he is, even in his shirt sleeves. Under his arm, he carries, of all things, a bundle of paper bags from the grocery in Cold Spring Harbor. And the pocket of his freshly laundered white ducks bulges with a ball of twine. Odd. An inshore breeze rustles the leaves of corn, making that music so familiar to every farmer. The music that young Henry Wallace already had learned to love. The half-formed plume tassels which are just emerging to crown the maize plant glory nod in the breeze. These tassels interest the dapper little professor tremendously. Intently he examines them, peering through his little half-moon spectacles, smiling, approving. Carefully, methodically, he puts a paper bag over the embryonic tassel and ties it with a bit of string. Gingerly, he goes up one row and down the next, capping every stalk, pausing only to mop his brow with his clean white handkerchief. The final experiment in man's mastery of maize is launched. The mills of the gods grind slowly. Nature is a leisurely old lady to whom a century is just a lazy summer afternoon, and she does not quickly confide her secrets. So it is 4 years before George Shull is sure, before he has finished the experiment he began that July afternoon. The fourth harvest since he first bagged those tassels has come, and now he has learned what man never knew before. His friend Dr. East, who was pretty much the last word on corn at the University of Illinois, has come out to Long Island to hear all about this new experiment and its fantastic results. Here they sit in the professor's laboratory, looking out across the little field of corn shocks toward the gray waters of the Sound, seated at a long table piled with ears of corn. Corn of all shapes and varieties.
Well, Shull, how did you ever get started breeding corn? You were a biologist.
Because I figured corn could tell me what I wanted to know about animals, and the human animal in particular.
But I don't see it.
You remember Johansson, the Danish botanist?
Yes, I've heard of him.
And his experiment with the bean?
I'm not so sure I remember that, no.
Well, he weighed thousands of beans. Found they varied greatly.
Of course. The beans raised from the heavy seeds were heavy, and those from the runts were small.
Well, roughly, yes, but very roughly. But when he took a light one and a heavy one, brothers of the same parent plant, and weighed their children, they didn't run true to type at all.
Huh?
They reverted to what the grandparent had been. In other words, the external differences aren't inherited.
Mm.
Well, I wanted to see if this was true of human beings.
And so?
Since I couldn't use human beings for an experiment, I chose corn. Corn is a plant you can breed to itself. The tassel carries the seed, the ear, the flower, and inbreed it. Marry it to itself.
Mm-hmm. I begin to see. And what,
Well, I capped every stalk with a paper bag and pollinized the ears of every plant with pollen from that plant itself.
What were they like?
Well, here are some samples. You, a corn man, will call them pretty poor specimens.
Yes, pretty poor.
Well, now, next year, they were worse. You see here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Runte, happy field ears. Generally worthless. Some stalks died, others didn't mature.
Well, that's to be expected.
Of course, but I did notice one thing.
Yeah? What was that?
Brothers from the same parent ear frequently didn't resemble each other at all.
Oh?
No, one would be a runt, another would be 8 feet high. Tall, spindly, and both from the same parent ear, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
Or one would be full and bushy, and its brother would have a single stalk.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But finally, after 3 years of inbreeding, the spindling ears raised spindly corn, the runts grew runts. Everyone bred true. In each of these plants, I had brought out one dominant trait that had been dormant in the original ears of that first stalk of corn I had used for seed back in 1903.
In other words, you've bred pure lines of corn. That's never been done. Now, what do you propose?
Well, this year, then, I crossed the pure lines.
Yeah.
Now, look here.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they're all good, and some of them are extraordinary. Now, here, look at this one.
Yeah, they're perfect. Perfect ear of corn as I've ever seen.
Now, here are its parents. This nubbin from a dwarf stalk not 4 feet high and a spindly stalk that bore only 2 half-filled ears.
Why, incredible.
And as nearly as I can estimate, the corn will run 10 bushels better to the acre than the original parent did before the crossbreeding started.
Why, that's marvelous.
Well, now, of course, Some crossbreeding was better than others. I'm not a corn man. You are. But here's the trick. Hybridize corn. Hybridize every pure strain, no matter how poor. Some of the marriages will click, like this one and this one. Oh, yes, and then this one here. And when you cross the right parents, find the right combination, they'll go on breeding true year after year as long as you keep strange pollen from cluttering up the strain.
Miraculous. Joe, do you have any idea what this means to the farmer, to the corn estates? Why, it'll increase the corn crop by millions of bushels.
Well, that's up to you, my friend. You're a corn man. I only wanted to prove that a pure line breeds true. But I should like to do the same experiment with primroses.
Primroses?
Yes. You see, I'm very fond of primroses. They're a very beautiful flower. A beautiful sight on a hot summer evening when they open their cool petals.
Grows Tall was the ninth of the series Men Who Made America, prepared for the schools of the nation by the Ohio School of the Air and presented as an NBC educational feature. It was an original radio drama by Meredith Page, prepared by the radio workshops of the State Department of Education and of Ohio State University under the direction of Mr. Page, and produced by the Crosley Players under the direction of Reichel Kent. This is Joseph Reese inviting you to listen to another of this series, Men Who Made America, next Thursday at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.